Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hi, before we talk to Buzz, let's talk about the New Deal Shop. We are so grateful that vaccinations for COVID-19 are underway. And while we're nearing the finish line for this brutal pandemic, getting there means staying safe. So for the foreseeable future, only respirator face masks provide real protection from transmission. Unfortunately, the huge demand and limited supply of respirators means we're flooded with fakes and counterfeits that do almost nothing. Right now, the NewDealShop.com has FDA-authorized N95 respirator masks with anti-fraud labeling on every single package. That can be verified right on the manufacturer's website. They're tested in the United States by the NPPTL and provide the most significant level of protection. These respirator masks are in stock in the U.S. and ship immediately for free. Go to thenewdealshop.com now and get verified, authenticated, FDA-authorized N95 masks shipped immediately to your home or business. That's thenewdealshop.com, thenewdealshop.com. And now let the cartoons begin.
Recorded live in the USA, covering the whole wide world.
Right on!
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
They led us wild and fast. They taint everything we had. And not just from us, from our fathers, and from our fathers' fathers.
And from our fathers' fathers' fathers.
Yeah.
And from our fathers' 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 fathers.
You're right, Stan, don't labor the point. And what have they ever given us in return?
The aqueduct? What? The aqueduct?
Oh, yeah, they did give us that. That's true, yeah.
And the sanitation.
Oh, yeah, the sanitation, Reg. Remember what the city used to be like?
Yeah, all right, I'll grant you, the aqueduct and sanitation are two things the Romans have done.
And the roads.
Well, yeah, obviously the roads. I mean, the roads go without sand, don't they? But apart from the sanitation, the aqueduct and the roads...
Irrigation.
Medicine.
Education. Yeah, all right, fair enough.
And the wine.
Yeah, that's something we really miss, Reg, if the Romans left.
Public baths.
And it's safe to walk in the streets at night now, Reg.
Yeah, they certainly know how to keep order. Let's face it, the only ones who could in a place like this.
All right, but apart from the sanitation, the medicine, education, wine, public order, irrigation, roads, the fresh water system and public health, what have the Romans ever done for us?
Brought peace.
Oh, peace. Shut up!
Bob Seska!
Hello, Seska. You're looking radiantly maternal.
The Bob Seska Show!
You wouldn't believe it, but I had a conversation just like that on Twitter the other day. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, March 9, 2021, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, my name is Bob. Hello.
Hello, Bob.
Hello. Day 49 of the Biden-Harris administration, 609 days until the 22 midterms. Find me on Instagram at TheBobSeska and on Twitter at BobSeskaGo. Oh, and look, it's Buzz Burbank sitting right over there. Hey, Buzz.
When you say Buzz Burbank,
you've said it all.
Boom, boom. Hi.
You do look radiantly maternal today.
I really, really try. You know, I take care of myself.
Hi, Bob. It shows. Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody. He's Bob.
Yeah.
I'm Buzz, and we're next in line to be interviewed by Oprah.
At long last, God damn it! It's about time she called us.
The subject of today's show, by the way, is filibustering,
mm-hmm.
and we plan to talk about that for a very long time. A lot of red states are dropping their mask mandates. So I'm sure you've seen that in the news. Not happy about that.
Yeah.
I will never, Bob, I'll never understand the Republican opposition to wearing a mask. I mean, they don't seem to mind the blinders.
Or the white hoods.
Well, here it is. Donald Trump has returned to New York. He returned to New York yesterday for the first time since leaving the White House.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why he went to New York. Maybe work out a two-way pardon with Mario Cuomo. I don't know.
Ooh, he's in trouble.
Yeah, a little bit. With all the talk, speaking of people being in trouble, there's been a lot of talk this week about the royal family. Mm-hmm. And Bob and I are very excited today to announce that Prince Charles has agreed to appear on this show. And I thought this was telling. He only had one backstage demand. No brown M&Ms.
The Bob Seska Show.
Let's go spreading now. Everybody's learning how. Come on, get infected with me. Come on, get infected with me.
Early in the morning, we'll be heading out. The virus will be coming along. We're loading up our Woody, not a mask in sight. We won't be staying healthy too long. Come on, Corona baby, wait and see. I'm gonna ignore the CDC. Come on with me, baby, let's head to the sea. We'll start a second wave, wait and see.
Let's go spreading now, everybody's learning how. Come on, get infected with me. Come on, get infected with me.
Oh yeah, the great Rocky Mountain Mike. Holy shit.
Yeah. That was awesome.
Another classic. Yeah. Definitely. Going out to Texas, a long distance request of dedication.
Frighteningly hilarious is what I'm going to rate that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, of course, even though we are here close to the end of the coronavirus pandemic, everyone's getting vaccinated now. And I get the sense I'm going to get that email from my healthcare provider and I'm going to go in and get the shot.
It's really starting to roll out very quickly. We've gotten both of our shots now, and I'm maybe 9 days shy now of being immune, at least for 90 days or longer. We don't know yet because it's still this pandemic is still new, as old as it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And vaccinations, as you heard this week, up to nearly 3 million in a day.
Wow.
With expectations that get up to 4 million. Can you imagine if 15 or 20 million people are getting vaccinated every week? It won't be very long before we hit that wall where we reach the people Mike was just singing about.
Yeah.
Those who refuse to get the shot, who also, in many cases, I'm afraid, happen to be the same people who refuse to wear a mask. Not always, but very frequently that's the case. But this is exciting, and this is part of this week's good news, is that the vaccines are rolling out fast. And yes, Bob, yours is coming sooner than we thought it was going to.
I don't know how to feel about this after the fact, but I feel ashamed. That's exactly how I feel. I feel ashamed that I went out and got a haircut yesterday. It's just like, oh God, it was a real roll of dice for me to go.
That's
and
the
do
kind
that.
Of thing that shuts down the NBA. You know, that's
oh shit. Hang on.
Did you knock your headphones off? What happened here?
I did. I yanked the headphones right out of the wall. Yeah, they.
Bob fell into a tube.
God damn. Yeah, I need a longer cord on my headphones, I think. Jesus Christ.
So.
Yeah. But I did. I decided, okay, I'm going to wear like 3 masks and go out and get my hair taken care of, because it was getting to this point where it's just a fucking disaster.
You had been in a deep freeze. Is the weather, I mean, could this have been an outdoor haircut, or is it still cold enough in D.C. that it had to be an indoor?
Well, it was outdoors. It was outdoors. So it was distance.
Really?
And everyone's wearing masks.
Oh,
and
Well,
so I was doing it safely. I wasn't going to take an extreme risk here, because, I mean, here's my mantra right now, Buzz. I've made it this far. I'm coming up on a year. As of March 15, that was the start of me isolating in place, and we're coming up on the one-year mark. The last thing I want to do is end up with this virus right at the end, after all of this sacrifice. Yeah,
I know. Well, that's a little how I felt when I was exposed to it. I didn't contract it. It didn't transmit to me for whatever unbelievably miraculous reason.
It's your superpower,
I guess.
Yeah.
But I laugh in the face of death, and have repeatedly. But I'd gone that long. I'd gone 10 and a half months without risking, and then all of a sudden, boom, you've been touched. You got the cooties.
Yeah.
And that was a terrifying feeling and a miserable feeling to have made it that far, mm-hmm. and not made it across. So fortunately, not positive. So yeah. And now even more fortuitous, vaccinated.
Well, I have been beyond extreme with my isolation, where I'm just really not taking any chances. I've actually had my hair cut at a barber shop 3 times in the last year. The rest of the time, I swear to God, I'm cutting it myself. And if you want to know, you ever had a dog who contracted mange, or as they call it, some people call it the mange? That's kind of what I looked like there for a period of time. I was able to disguise it pretty well for the Stephanie Miller show. But for the most part, oh my God, patches of no hair where the razor went haywire. Because all I've got here is an electric beard trimmer. I used to have a beard, I would trim my beard with this thing. And now I'm trimming my head with the same thing. And because I'm right-handed, everything that happens on the left side of my head gets completely butchered. I mean, it was just an utter disaster. Plus, I'm kind of, I'm getting older, so my hair is thinning on the top, and it's just a goddamn mess. So I rolled the dice, and I did it yesterday. I think I'm going to be okay. And in fact, I was wearing 3 of the regular blue N95. Yes. I guess they're N95 masks.
Surgical masks, but they're very good. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So I was wearing 3 of them, and when I got back in the car, I took off 1, and I felt like a madman.
I know. Felt like a loose woman or a loose man, I guess.
That's actually an old Dennis Miller. That was an old Dennis Miller joke. He told on SNL one night. He told the joke. Sometimes I wear 3 condoms and I take 2 of them off and I feel like a madman. And that was one of my
That was when he was funny. Remember
that? Yes. We all enjoyed that.
And then I don't know what happened. No,
9/11.
But I have to say this out loud on your show because I don't know if it's been said. I've seen it, other people say it, I want to say it for myself, and that is there's such a great feeling of relief.
Yeah.
Even after, if you're getting the 2 shots, even after the first shot, it's like you think, well, this was never going to get here, and then you got it. Mm-hmm. And because so much protection is provided by the first shot, you automatically feel a little safer.
Yeah.
And then when you get the second shot, then you think, oh, man, and you still have to be careful. You still have to wear a mask and social distance and all those kinds of things. Avoid crowds, wash your hands. But it's a great sense of relief,
mm-hmm.
to get vaccinated. You will feel, we were talking, I think you and I mentioned last week that we were sleeping better now that what's his name isn't president anymore. You will sleep betterer, mm-hmm. once you've gotten that shot, and then if there is one, a second shot.
Yeah, my mom got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine the other day, and as they were doing it, she broke down crying. She was so happy. She was so thrilled to finally have it.
Very
and
common.
Be one step closer to being with her grandkids again and with her kids. Yep. She is very much into that kind of shit, and the past year, any person who's really into spending time with their family has been devastated this past year because they haven't been able to do it. And my mom was one of those people. I was so glad that she and her husband finally got that that vaccine. And so she's counting the days until people can come to her house again and have a good time. And so that was a really important step for her. But I have a feeling this American Rescue Plan is going to be an enormous stride forward. And not only in terms of COVID and eliminating COVID in terms of getting to the point where we are herd immune from this thing, where you combine the vaccine, everyone getting the vaccine, getting their boosters when they need them. And then finally, COVID could be eliminated because of all of this, because of this extra money that Joe Biden and the Democrats are throwing at the problem. But it's not just that. It's not just COVID. This blows me away, Buzz. This piece of legislation, we all know how unprecedented it is. $1.9 trillion, which is, I think, more than $1 trillion higher than the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, the stimulus under Barack Obama. And we're going to see the benefit of it probably within the next year or two. And one of the major benefits of it is going to be that it's going to cut childhood poverty in half.
More than half. From 14% down to 6% by all estimates.
Yeah.
This is amazing. This is one of the biggest pieces of social legislation. Perhaps you've heard others say this, the Affordable Care Act under Obama, combined with the changes being made in this bill, some of the biggest social change we've seen in decades. This is huge, and wonderful things are being accomplished here. Black farmers are being helped.
Yeah.
The list of theaters and concert venue people, restaurant owners above all others, are getting financial help. This is a major turnaround for the country. You will see a lot done here, and it's just, this COVID relief bill is just, and we call it that even though it's a lot of other things, ending childhood poverty, not the least of which, but that, as big as it is only part of the American rescue that you were just talking about, which will take, I think, progress forward. We'll see even more progress. This is not as big a social change as this is. He's just getting started.
100% subsidies going into COBRA health insurance premiums. Mm-hmm. So that's it. I mean, if you're out of work and you're using COBRA for your health insurance for you and your family, you're 100% covered because of this act. 100%. That's staggering.
And he had reopened the enrollment period. Yeah. So there's no bureaucratic trick here to keep you from enjoying that benefit.
But I was arguing with Red Roses, otherwise known as the Dirtbag Left, on Twitter the other day, who were insisting that because it doesn't entirely eliminate childhood poverty, it's a right-wing piece of legislation. That is what the far left is saying right now about this thing. The Democrats can't win for losing, for God's sake. They passed this unprecedented piece of legislation, cuts childhood poverty in half, something that the Red Roses, the far left, the far progressive left, wasn't even pushing for. They weren't even asking for that. So childhood poverty among black families is going to go from 20% down to 13%. Because of this law. Hispanic families, 18% down to 11%. And they're sitting there with their arms crossed going, not good enough. I was like, well, where were you guys even asking for something like this? And nowhere to be found. They were focused on other things, and that's fine. But at the same time, you know, you don't shit on something that you yourself had nothing to fucking do with. That is a massive accomplishment as far as I'm concerned.
Those are the usual whiners. We've come to expect that, I think from them. They did not win the day, however.
Well, even though the Red Roses weren't lobbying for this, it was addressed anyway. I mean, this is a major progressive accomplishment. This is something that not only do we have massive dollar amounts being paid out to American families and businesses and so on, but at the same time, this is a rollback of the kind of fiscal policy that we have been experiencing since the early 80s. This government is the problem kind of thing. You know, it's I'm government, I'm here to help. The entire Ronald Reagan boogeyman that he created, which put us into this austerity tailspin for several decades where, oh my God, the government can't spend money. Oh shit, we're going to go broke and it's going to be bankruptcy and we're going to run up the credit card and yada, yada, yada about the national debt and the deficit. And now this, I think, goes a long way to rolling back that kind of attitude.
It does. Yeah. And I think it reflects a change overall. Again, I think those are the usual whiners. They did not win the day. They don't help. And I think the fact that that goes on is part of that ongoing struggle that we are seeing every day now between the moderate, more moderate, and more progressive wings of the Democratic Party. Yeah. Maybe that's even a healthy thing. I don't know. I mean, what the Red Roses are saying is not helpful, certainly. But having that debate present, I don't think has to deter us. And in this case, did not deter us from doing what needed to be done. And we're on track to do more. I think it's a reflective of a societal change as well.
Yeah.
I think attitudes are changing, not just among Democrats who bought into some of those theories for so many decades, But I think even seeing it in moderates and some Republicans are coming around, I think, on that way of thinking.
Well, there's certainly something weird going on the far left in terms of the overall thrust of what they're trying to accomplish. It seems to me as if this fight that I was having, and it wasn't just random Red Rose people on Twitter. I'm talking about, you know, some of the influencers on the far left and the denial that was happening that I was witnessing directly in terms of saying, well, you're cutting child poverty in half, not good enough. It just seems ludicrous to me to take that position. This is a major stride toward eliminating childhood poverty.
Yes.
And so my response was, you want to make, for example, college education free, or you want to do some of these other progressive issue items, and none of those things eliminate poverty. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I mean, it slashes poverty, certainly, to have universal health insurance and so on, but it doesn't eliminate poverty. And so I don't know why this expectation is taking place other than to troll, to be contrarians, to screw up the paradigm. It sounds like the kind of Russia-motivated shit that we saw, or that we're still seeing, on the red hat.
I think in the case of those influencers, I think it's ego-driven. I think, you know, they're thugs, they're ne'er-do-wells. it's what gets them off. Now, if it coincides with a Russian agenda, and any division does, but I think a lot of that, frankly, is ego-driven. You know, it's I'm smarter than you. Look at me. You guys are all wrong. Your plan's not going to work. You suck. Thank you. Goodbye.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One prominent influencer was saying that 17 million fewer people are going to get checks this time than under Trump. And the total check dollar amount was going to be more under Trump. But the reality is that Americans are going to get significantly more under the American Rescue Act. And
more of the right people. And I want to talk about the right people again in a second, if we could.
Oh, yeah. 20 million people who didn't get stimulus under Trump is going to get it under this bill. I mean, we're talking about 17-year-olds, college students, dependents, U.S. citizens with undocumented spouses. They're all going to get checks. And never
mind the Red Roses. Republicans are out there telling out-and-out lies about how prisoners are going to get checks and illegal immigrants, as they call them, are going to get checks. And those are lies that we need to focus on if we're while we're focusing on lies. The lying, the outrageous bald-faced lying continues. It pushes out disinformation. People pick that up, and if I can just veer us off for a bit, it would be about the people who deserve it. I think it, because of the need to get the money out quickly, we can't be as careful as maybe we'd like to be about where the money goes, but these claims about it going to prisoners and immigrants is just not true. The number of immigrants to which this is minuscule, and I mean fractional. The same with inmates, possibly going to some who have minor crimes, who are in for minor crimes or nonviolent crimes. There some thought has been put into it, but I hear so many people from both parties, both the Republican voters and Democratic voters that I speak to, are saying, you're talking about unemployment benefits and saying so many people have decided they can make more money not working than they can make working. And that's a sign that things have spun out of control. There are so many people who need that money. Many people are not getting enough. I don't believe it. I know, and if you saw John Oliver this week, you saw a comparison between, and this was, I think, pre-pandemic, the unemployment checks coming out of Massachusetts are $1,200 a week. Then unemployment checks coming out of Florida, what few there are $200 a week. $1,200 a week versus $200 a week with no national minimum set. I'm just not buying, if the unemployment checks are $200 a week in Florida, I'm just not buying that people are making more money and enough to live on just unemployment yeah. Without working.
Oh, yeah. And I was hearing that from a few different people. Like, oh, my God, where the hell are they going to get the money to pay for this? This is going to be, the old ways, the old way of thinking, the old fiscal austerity comes back to haunt us. Where people are going, I don't know, what about all this pork and all these things that the members of Congress are sticking in there, all these wastefful spending riders and stuff. Yeah, it's about jobs. It's about, you know, the role of Congress. If you're elected to Congress, your role is to go in and get as much money as you can for your state or your district. That's just how it goes. You want to be able to go home and say, yeah, I got X billions of dollars, X millions of dollars to pay for new jobs and new roads and et cetera, new projects here in the state or here in the district. And that's the whole idea of going to Congress, for God's sake.
You know how much a government benefit, domestic government benefit money goes to fraud and waste?
Yeah.
3%.
Yeah, right.
Corporations, oil companies,
mm-hmm.
communications giants, Amazon, Google, getting by with huge, incredible, insane tax breaks.
Yeah.
We're giving them money by the truckload
mm-hmm.
and whining about the 3% of people who are getting unemployment who shouldn't be.
No one ever talks about that, though, Buzz.
No, that's why I'm here today, Bob.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, for example, the tax bill that Donald Trump passed with the Republicans in the Senate, that never received the kind of scrutiny as far as wasteful spending, or are the wealthy going to exploit this and find new loopholes? Every time there's a spending bill that's passed, everyone goes, well, the poor people are just going to take advantage of this and they're never going to want to work again. And that is simply not the question that everyone asks when there's a big tax cut that gets passed. No one talks about.
Yeah. And that Trump Republican tax cut that you're just now talking about, that cost the government over $2 trillion.
Yep.
And we're whining about, well, we're not, but some Republicans, all Republicans,
mm-hmm.
are whining about $1.9 trillion for COVID relief.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, at some point, they're going to address the deficit and the debt. I mean, it's going to happen at some point. But for right now,
of course,
the emergency takes precedent over any form of austerity.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah,
that's it right there. That's
and plus, the whole deal. You know, you ask any financial planner, any financial expert, and they're going to tell you, look, the government is different than your own household finances because, among many reasons, the government can print money. You know, you cannot personally print money. The government, if the government wants to print money, it can sure as hell print more money if it needs to.
Yeah, the emergency, I mean, you said it, with the emergency takes precedent. It absolutely does. You started this conversation by saying that we're going to see a lot of changes in a year, and mm-hmm. you talked about childhood poverty as a huge glaring example of the change we're going to see. I would propose also that we're going to see changes within the next couple of weeks. I think we're going to start feeling the benefits of this COVID relief plan
mm-hmm.
in a couple of weeks, and we will continue to see benefits throughout the year leading up to that. And some of these programs in this bill are set to expire in a year, but there's already talk of making them permanent.
That's what happens when you end up using the reconciliation process. You have to constantly renew the legislation, and that becomes problematic. Right. And I hope they have the votes to renew a lot of these programs after a year, mm-hmm. the things that end up mm-hmm. expiring. But, you know, we'll see. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. In the meantime, though, the impact of this right now, we're only going to begin to see the full scope, I think. There's going to, certainly, as you say, there's going to be benefits in the next few weeks. But the full scope of this thing, I think, very likely will lead to what's considered to be, and in fact, Chris Hayes was talking about this with Paul Krugman on MSNBC last night. I think it's going to lead to a Goldilocks recovery, which is not too hot and not too cold. It's not too fast like a bubble, and it's not too slow like a slow recovery. What's going to happen is it's going to be just right. And that, I think, is going to lead us to what could very well amount to another roaring 20s. I think that is something that we can maybe not, you know, to place bets on, but I think it's enough to feel good about what's coming around the corner.
I knew I should have hung onto that zoot suit.
That's right. Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah. And your little, your straw campaign hats, right?
Right.
Wasn't that, didn't all the guys in the 20s wear that?
Skimmer.
Your skimmer. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's all going to come back in style, I'm sure, right? I don't know. Yeah, but again, the government is in a very unique position to be able to thrust money into an economy that's sputtering. And this is one of those situations where it's sputtering, and it may not be evident when you look at the Dow or something like that. But in terms of jobs, I mean, we lost 9.5 million jobs in the past year because of COVID. And so, you know, despite the job recovery that we're in the middle of right now, still a long way to go, but this is going to help, I believe.
So if I hear you right, what you're saying is the government is now in a position to do what a government is supposed to do.
That's exactly right. That's
okay,
exactly
right. I got it.
Yeah, yeah.
I got it.
The thing that you're talking about, Buzz, is the thing that should be the default for our government.
Yes, but it's how it should have been all along.
Yeah, you go back to the New Deal, you go back to World War II, and you see the economic booms created by those levels of spending, and then the austerity, the backlash that took place after that, where, whoa, oh my God, we can't run up big deficits like that. And that tends to cripple the ability of the economy to recover when it needs to. And you can't just wait it out. Like Japan, for example, ended up in this prolonged recession that lasted years and years and years. In fact, I think they're still recovering from it. And that was because of the desire, the false desire for austerity, for fiscal conservatism, to not pump any government money into the economy and just let the free market work it out. Well, that doesn't always work. Sometimes you may catch a break and it works, but for the most part, you need to infuse government cash into the economy in order for it to recover.
Government is there to serve the people with the people's money.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to go too far in terms of generating inflation, but at the same time, I think there is as I said, there is a Goldilocks zone to shoot for, and I think this more than adequately hit it.
As you were saying, this is not inadequate, it's not opulent, it's just right. Yeah. I think history is going to remember Obama and Biden as great, great presidents. And, of course, Trump as the snidely whiplash intermission.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about our Patreon page. If you're sick and tired of the commercials on the show, like the one I'm reading right now, I have a solution for you. For just $15 per month, you can get the Ultimate Edition of this show. Here's what that means. The Ultimate Edition combines the free version of the show with the post-mortem show that we record after the end credits. Plus, we take out all the commercials for you. That means you get the hour-long free show plus the 20-minute post-mortem show, and you get all that without commercials for just $15 per month. That's BobSeskaShow.com, or just click the all-caps Patreon link beneath the logo at BobSeska.com. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
2, 3, 4.
Woke up at a 9:15, tried to sleep in today, missed a free breakfast at the local club, tried to find some motivation, don't know where I'll end up today, planned a fun Saturday, hanging with my pals, called Pete and Johnny.
That's the great Barker and Broski. It's a brand new song called Saturday from their new album titled The Legacy of Billy Bob Sr. So I think you get a bit of a sense of what this album's all about.
Whimsy.
Yeah, exactly right.
This is like, this song, a little like a reggae meets B-52s.
Yeah, exactly right.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love
it.
It's fun. I immediately started bouncing in my chair like a toddler when this song started playing.
It's automatic. Absolutely. Gotta love Barker and Broski. It's been a while since we heard from those guys, and I'm glad they're back with new music here after about a year or so. BobSeska.com/music if you want to submit. Any music countdown can be found at BobSeska.com and everywhere you get your podcasts too. Okay.
Say, Bob, let me ask you something.
Yes.
Having a show, what's that like?
I know. Do you feel like when it comes to like Thursday morning at like 10 a.m., do you suddenly get like this adrenaline rush?
I don't even know what day it is anymore. I know. I have my alarm set for Tuesday. That's it right now. Yeah. I'm still learning what retirement is like. I'm in the early stages, and anybody who's been through this knows the emotional things you go through. And it's not like dramatic or anything. It's just you have different thoughts at different times, and sometimes you have this great feeling of freedom, and then other times you feel lost and afraid.
Oh yeah.
You know, so it's an interesting experience. I know it's going to be fine. I'm good with it. Like I said, I'll be back with something at some point, I have no doubt. But right now, I'm doing stuff.
There you go. Yeah. You know what? When I take a vacation, and this is just a period of time where I'm off for like a week, I'll be sitting around, and then suddenly there'll be some voice in my head going, wait, you need to be doing something. Go do something right now. And I'm like, no, shut up. I'm on vacation. Shut up, voice in my head. I don't want to hear your bitching at me. You don't need to motivate me. I know what I'm doing. I'm taking a vacation. I can't even imagine once you've gotten to that point where you've retired from your main gig and you're suddenly going, oh, shit, what do I, is there something? Did Trump do something? Wait a minute. No, that's over. I can relax.
You know, there's something. I do have something to do right now, which is, and I know you want to talk about this. It's movie awards season.
Oh, yeah.
And as a member of the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists and the Screen Actors Guild, I vote in the Screen Actors Guild or SAG Awards, and that means they send me screeners so that I can see all the movies that are being considered, and about halfway through a stack of, I don't know, 16 movies, something like that.
Yeah.
And there's some great ones out there. I recommended one to you and Kimberly that you finally saw.
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about that on the postmortem show?
Oh, no, we're going to talk about that right now.
Good. Yeah. How fortuitous.
Yeah. Promising Young Woman is the movie.
Almost like we planned this bit.
No, as a matter of fact, Buzz, I was going to mention Promising Young Woman. Yes, that's
a Promising Young Woman. Yeah. Fantastic movie. Yeah.
Carey Mulligan, Adam Brody, Ryan Cooper, Molly Shannon, Alfred Molina plays a great little cameo role in it, too. Without giving away spoilers or anything like that, we joke about this with Kimberly all the time. Kimberly's got this Vagenda of Manicide slogan that goes along with her and her podcast. And when we're watching this movie, we're watching Promising Young Woman, I'm like, they could have called this Vagenda of Manicide if they wanted to be silly, because it was really what I envisioned to be a Vagenda of Manicide. Because essentially, and without giving away too much of it, Carey Mulligan plays someone who has been hurt in the past. And I'm not going to detail the extent of what happened to her, but she is almost like a Dexter type vigilante without the murder part.
Right, right. Seeking and revenge. It's a story of revenge.
Exactly right. So she ends up pretending to be drunk in a bar, for example, and then all these guys.
Don't say too much.
Okay.
Say too much. Yeah. But let me say this for movie lovers. If the subject matter alone doesn't intrigue you, as a lover of movies, here's what's fascinating about this movie. It's everything.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. It's hilarious. It's every emotion. You know, I talked about this on the interview show, but it puts you through every emotion a person can go through.
Yeah.
And just when you think you've figured out what kind of movie it is, you haven't. It's every kind of movie, and it's amazing. So on a film level, I highly recommend this movie. Not nominated for Best Picture, at least not with the Screen Actors Guild, the acting awards, but a fantastic, impressive movie nevertheless. Also enjoyed very, very much News of the World, and I'm rooting for the little girl to win the Best Supporting Actress.
Oh, I still need to see that. That's the Tom Hanks Western, isn't it?
Helena Zengel. Is the girl's name, and she does. I've always thought of acting as something you do mainly with your face. A few people do it as well as Kristen Johnson on Mom.
Yeah,
she's an incredible facial actor. There are a number of them out there. This young woman, Helena Zengel, has this ability also, and in fact has very little dialogue, very little English. Some of the dialogue she has is German, some is Native American, but mostly she is silent. Mostly she does her acting with her face, and she's just amazing. So I highly recommend Tom Hanks, News of the World.
One of the things I took away from Promising Young Woman, though, is this thought. Predators If you're a guy, and also predators who think you're just a nice guy, you might think you're being inventive with the way you kind of manipulate women, but you're not. You're not being inventive or clever. You're immensely predictable, and this movie's got the act down cold. I mean, Carey Mulligan's character.
I'll applaud that statement.
Knew exactly what to look for and could predict every move step by step that was being made, and all the way down to guy, but I'm a nice guy. I'm a nice guy. No, well, hang on. You know what? From a screenplay perspective alone, this is one of the best screenplays, one of the best written films that I've seen in a long, long time.
Absolutely.
And when you said clever, that is exactly what this movie is. It is so fucking smart.
Yeah, it is. And but I was also applying that to the men who think they've got a unique approach with women. No, everybody's on to you.
exactly. Well, let's completely change subjects and talk about the filibuster here for a second, because I think
only for a second.
We are starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel. And it may not actually mean eliminating the filibuster entirely.
Right.
But last week, Kimberly and I talked about this a little bit on the after party on Friday. But it bears repeating that Norm Ornstein and Lawrence O'Donnell came up with a strategy that I think is immensely doable. Mm-hmm. This is something that already Joe Manchin has embraced and is on board with. Basically, what they are suggesting, and Norm Ornstein wrote a whole piece about it in The Atlantic back in September, even before Joe Biden was elected, even before the Democrats won the Senate. And what he was saying is, and I'm going to spare a lot of the wonky parliamentary details, because it is very, very complicated. But the ultimate point is to base the cloture motions on who is present and voting. In other words, what this will do is this will require the minority party in the Senate to be present, standing, and literally filibustering, staying up all night, etc., in order to block pieces of legislation.
No green eggs and ham.
That's exactly.
They have to stay on point. Right. This is I think they should call it the Jimmy Stewart bill.
Yeah.
Because I started out saying we got to eliminate the filibuster.
Right.
Which I think was a good negotiating point to start from. Mm-hmm. because it really did. I think everybody saying that was contributing to a conversation that got people thinking.
Yeah.
And we were able to squeeze out of Joe Manchin what it is he'd like to see done. And as it turns out, he's got some pretty good ideas, or at least he adopted some pretty good ideas from Norm Ornstein and Lawrence O'Donnell. But at any rate, we've come to a point of compromise where we can reform the filibuster to make it what it was originally intended to be, which is a voice for the minority, which we're going to be glad to have someday, possibly, but maybe not with election reforms. But in case we find ourselves in that position again, it'll be nice to at least have a voice and to at least have a real debate and discussion. Under the changes being proposed, Republicans would not only have to speak constantly during that time, but they would have to speak on topic as to why they have adopted the position they have adopted and what they're pushing for.
Yeah.
They may not win, but at least they'll get that out there. Republicans use that now for Fox News sound bites. This is the kind of reform that once again makes the filibuster what Jimmy Stewart would have done in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
That's right. And so what I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think my interpretation of what Norm Ornstein is writing about is that the 3/5 that are required to end a filibuster will be based on who is present in the Senate chamber at that moment.
What they're talking about now is requiring 41 votes to sustain the filibuster instead of 60 votes to kill the filibuster. Changing that rule alone is a huge, huge reform that, again, makes the filibuster what it was originally intended to be, because it can be a very useful tool for no matter who's in power.
So this is a tremendous compromise solution. solution that can go a long way to getting some, but not all, of the Democratic Biden agenda through the Senate. And I think it's enough. I think I would rather take getting, half of it done than none of it done. And right now we're talking about none of it.
It may result in even more than that. I have higher hopes for it. I think this opens a double door very widely to get those things done. I'm very optimistic about what can get done if we make the reforms that you and I have just covered here.
That's right. Have you heard anything from Chuck Schumer? Has Chuck Schumer reacted to this yet? Any Democratic leadership in the Senate said, hey, you know what, this is a good idea. I've seen some remarks from Amy Klobuchar and some other members. Certainly Mazie Hirono was talking about it on MSNBC last night, and how good of an idea it is. So it is it is kind of circulating. It's making its rounds, and I think it's only a matter of time before Chuck Schumer goes, hey, you know what, let's do this. And it should be Klobuchar, sooner rather than later. Yeah,
Klobuchar also started from a position of kill the filibuster, and now she's embracing this compromise. So, and we're seeing Manchin, who said never. What part of Jesus Christ, what part of never don't you understand, I believe were his words. Made it very clear that he would not kill the filibuster. Now we have both Klobuchar and Manchin saying, hey, you know what, this is a good idea. Well, I can't help but think that Schumer would go along with that. I don't know. Obviously, we can't speak for him, but I'm very optimistic about this. It's a very good solution, and it makes me think a little bit about what I sort of half jokingly said was an opening position for negotiations, which was kill the filibuster. That prompted a discussion in much the same way as defund the police started a conversation. Now, that was a detrimental phrase politically before an election. That was not helpful in that regard, but it did start a conversation that began to affect local changes at the local level, but those changes, it will affect more changes under the Biden administration on a national level, because those are the kinds of things that are being examined for reform now at the federal level under the Biden administration. So maybe there's some sanity in starting with a radical position like defund the police or kill the filibuster, and then working toward a middle solution. And this is a delightful example of not bipartisanship, but how compromises can be made to get stuff done.
Well, and also this Ornstein solution is actually something Mitch McConnell would do. I mean, this is the kind of end around, the kind of flanking maneuver that Mitch McConnell would employ in order to get some sort of latitude for himself, like rolling back the filibuster a little bit. And again, it is so clever that it's undeniable that Manchin and Sinema would be nuts to walk away from this plan, because it gives them everything they want, while at the same time, I mean, it literally gives them everything they want, including the accolades of the Democratic establishment.
Nobody can accuse Democrats of censoring the minority because they're still allowed to speak. In fact, they have to.
Right. Oh, God. Well, I want to.
Fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got some news from John Barrasshole here. I want to talk about here in just a second. Also, Josh Hawley. And before we leave the free show, Buzz, and segue into the postmortem show, I got to talk about those idiots in Ohio, or not in Ohio, but in Idaho. Burning their masks. I've got the scoop on the fumes that they were creating.
Oh, really?
By burning those goddamn masks like the idiots they are. So
you're not saying there were chemicals in those masks, are you, Bob?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I can't wait to hear.
What you want to do is get your children all gathered around the oil drum, burning all the masks and breathing in all those cancer-causing fumes. Good luck to you.
Get a pencil and paper ready, or whatever you write with.
That's right.
And jot down the chemicals Bob will be giving you.
Well, that and more right after these words.
Yeah.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius. Doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska.
Out to get me, that's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer.
Never heard this song before. Joking. This is a great Richard Turgeon covering the Monkees, and I'm a Believer here. Brand new single from him.
Yeah.
RichardTurgeon.bandcamp.com. You want to support his music? So good. So good. What a great cover of this song. And always makes me think, Kimberly and I were watching the Behind the Music episode about the Monkees, Buzz.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Fascinating. I'm really very fond of them.
Yeah, so am I. You know what? And I was a Monkees super fan when I was a senior in high school, I believe. I think they were playing the Monkees on MTV at the time. And so there was a whole resurgence in Monkees popularity. But one of the funniest things in this Behind the Music episode, in fact, you know what? I say one of the funniest things. One of the funniest things to me, but and I hope you appreciate the comedy in this, Buzz. This will be a good gauge in terms of our comedic overlap here.
Simpatico.
There was a guy in this Behind the Music episode about the Monkees. His name was Gary Strobel. I still remember the name. His official title as one of the talking heads in the Behind the Music episode about the Monkees, his official title was Gary Strobel, Monkees Historian. I'm not making that up. He was a Monkees Historian.
Remember when we had that job? We were Monkees Historians?
I know. Okay. One of the things that it's so funny to me about that is it suggests that there's like an academic quality to it. Like the guy went to college, got his PhD in Monkees History, became therefore a licensed Monkees Historian. Okay, so moving along here.
I got to interview Mickey Dolenz once. That's as close as I got to the Monkees. But okay. And I highly recommend, if you can find this video, a DVD, or maybe you'll find it on a streaming service, or maybe you won't. It's called Elephant Parts, and it's a like a 1 hour comedy special from Mike Nesmith, and it's got some of that sort of like Monkees sensibility to it, but hipper.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great music and very silly, funny comedy in there and fake commercials and stuff that I still find enjoy. It's a little dated, but even though it's decades old now, I still find it highly entertaining today. So if you can find Elephant Parts by Mike Nesmith, by all means do that.
Okay, so someone who has no business talking about anything, especially math, John Barrasso, Senator Barrasso, tweeted, if you were to grade the president's ability to keep his promise on opening schools, he would get an F. It's a well-deserved grade because he promised to have schools open all across America within 100 days. He's failed. Instead, he got in line behind the teachers union. Well, that's a bunch of horseshit because, of course, we're only, 49 days to the Biden administration.
To him, it seems like 100 days. And, you know, that's something else we should note here, if I may, that Biden's first 100 days are going to be amazing. History will be astounded at all the things Biden has done and undone in his first 100 days. A man must stay very busy.
You just got to look at the $1.9 trillion piece of legislation, that essentially creates stimulus for the American people. This isn't like TARP, where all the money was getting lent out to banks and so on. This is money that's being paid directly to the American people. $1.9 trillion, and he got that done in less than 50 days. By the time he signs it, what's it going to be, Saturday? I think they're talking about signing it. I think the House is going to pass it within the next 24 hours or so. And so that's a gigantic accomplishment and one that cannot be downplayed. And I really hope, though, that the Democrats put some backbone into pushing this and promoting it and saying, look what we did. Look at this. So maybe a little bit into the Trump self-promotion territory where you start bragging about this shit.
Because, you know, and that's, again, what I was saying earlier about the sound bites, the Republicans speaking out against a program that 70% of Americans favor so that they could put these in campaign ads to appeal to Trump voters to whom they still cower.
Yeah.
So it's just silly on the face of it. But it just know, Democrats need to know that Republicans are out there right now video recording these campaign ad clips that they're going to be using. And Democrats need to be out there making those same clips about the things that have been accomplished and the people who've been helped. And when it comes to PR, Democrats are going to have to fight back a little harder than the Republicans.
Yeah, and I noticed a tweet today from Eric Erickson, of all people, who was saying, and you know what? I wasn't sure I disagreed with it. He was commenting on the fact that Republicans have spent the past week talking about Dr. Seuss. Eric Erickson said, you know what? When it comes to Election Day and the midterms, more people are going to remember Dr. Seuss than they remember COVID relief. And I'm going, I mean, I think he's talking about Republicans, maybe Republican voters. I can't imagine that Democrats would give a shit about Dr. Seuss. And I'm going, yeah, you know what? If it's among Republican voters, he's probably right. He's probably right.
Trump voters, for sure. Yeah, that flavor, which is the majority now of Republican voters. But yes, that's the kind of stuff they eat up. That's the kind of grudge they like to carry into the voting booth.
That's right.
They will deny that Biden has accomplished anything. They do already deny that Biden has accomplished or could be credited with anything whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea.
Well, we saw these idiots in Idaho burning their masks as if there aren't people on this planet who need masks. You know, it's just like, first of all, it's immensely wasteful. But this is all more of this COVID shirking that we've been witnessing for the past year, where people think it's like some sort of trespass against their freedom or liberty to do the right thing, to follow the COVID protocols and so on. Well, so they decided in Idaho to get all their kids together for some reason and make a big oil drum full of fire and put their masks in the fire and burn their masks. But the first thing I thought of when I'm seeing this is the fumes that are being emitted because they're burning these masks that are partly made of plastic. And the thing I thought of, one of the first things I thought of is maybe 15, 20 years ago on HBO, there was this great documentary made by this filmmaker who was trying to figure out why there was a cancer cluster in her neighborhood. And she determined that one of the causes of it was a series of house fires that burned the vinyl siding of the houses, creating cancer-causing fumes that then created a cancer cluster in that neighborhood.
Wow.
And that was the first thing that popped into my head as soon as I saw these kids. I mean, little kids, like 7, 8 years old, throwing these masks into the open flame and then into the smoke coming up and the fumes. So I looked it up and I said, well, okay, the kind of masks they were using, what kind of fumes might these things generate?
Yeah, they were using, it looked like they were burning the blue surgical masks.
Yeah, exactly. These are the exact kind of masks that Kimberly and I have been using for the past year.
Okay.
It says here, so I looked it up and experts have determined that many of the masks appeared to be, as you said, the blue surgical face masks, which are often primarily made of polypropylene, a type of plastic. And so burning polypropylene results in the formation of dozens of different chemicals, some pretty well known and not of concern in this scenario, such as water and carbon dioxide. But
I've got my number two pencil ready.
There you go. But some are certainly toxic. These include formaldehyde.
Formaldehyde.
Most well known for preserving biological specimens. Acetone, the strong smelling compound used in nail polish remover, and methanol, the main component in antifreeze. So you're talking about acetone, formaldehyde, methanol. And by the way, acetone, I'm pretty sure acetone is a corrosive chemical that if you put something in a vat of acetone, it's going to disintegrate in there.
Probably, so, yeah. It's the only thing that will take out nail polish.
Right, right. Well, others released by burning polypropylene include xylene, which is used in some laboratories to prepare tissues for microscopy, but only in a specialized fume hood due to its toxic properties.
I dated xylene in high school.
You did too, man. I think that might have been before I did. I'm not sure. I dated benzene. That's
younger sister. Yeah,
benzene, the younger sister. Oh yeah. By the way, benzene also one of the dangerous chemicals found in the in these masks.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
When you burn it in polypropylene, it's a dangerous chemical found in car exhaust and cigarette smoke. Well, boy, you got to bring your kids and. Suck in the benzene, ladies and gentlemen. Several chemicals such as toluene or toluene?
Toluene,
yeah. Found in paint thinner were also detected. Mm-hmm. Many of these compounds can cause eye irritation, respiratory problems, and some of the chemicals found are also listed as probable or possible carcinogens linked to the development of cancers.
There was a kid named Ted in my shop class in high school who'd go back into the paint storage room and sniff toluene.
Really?
Yeah, and then one day Ted walked out in front of a moving car and was killed.
Are you serious?
No, yeah, yeah, I'm absolutely serious.
Oh my God! Because he was blasted on toluene.
I don't know the facts of the case. I just give you the facts I have.
Wow! Holy shit! Well, yeah, you certainly don't want your kids huffing it in the name of making some sort of
no. You know, and the kids would have been fine if they'd just worn masks.
Okay, that's where we end the show. That is a perfect way to end the show.
Oh. I think Democrats ought to have a pants burning, where we burn. don't let society tell you you have to wear pants.
No shit.
Let's burn. Let's all get together and burn our pants
and make sure
burn our pants.
Make sure one of the ingredients in your pants is polypropylene for an extra fun experience. You never know when that's going to come back to haunt you. So good luck.
Don't hurt Xylene. She's a good gal.
All right. Well, after the show, I'm going to start collecting all my pants. I'm going to be ready for this. I'm going to hold you to this, Buzz Burbank.
Bob and Buzz's pants burning. Be there.
All right. Well, we still have more to talk about. We didn't get to Josh Hawley, so we're going to talk about Josh Hawley's weird college dorm poster. We're going to talk about that on the Postmortem Show coming up next on our Patreon page, patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. All you got to do is sign up for $5 a month. And for that $5 a month, you get two Postmortem shows every week after this music is done playing. We keep on talking for about another 15, 20 minutes, and you get something that no one else is getting. That's it. And it's where all the real fun happens. So you're missing out if you're not subscribed to the Postmortem Show on our Patreon page.
Yeah. Can you think of anything more fun than a postmortem? I don't think you can. Who doesn't want a postmortem?
That's right. If you know the Latin translation, it's not that fun sounding. But
trust me. It's a figure of speech in this case.
It is ironical, is what it is.
And there you go.
Yeah, yeah. We're also going to talk about some news from the insurrection and the Q shaman who's, been slapped back by the judge in the case. That's interesting. Plus, some news from the Supreme Court and maybe some more here. Andrew Cuomo and, maybe a couple more things on coronavirus. I don't know.
It'll be jam-packed.
Yeah, it'll be jam-packed. It's going to be a couple of hours, not 20 minutes. I don't know what the hell I was talking about back then. Meanwhile, Buzz Burbank can be found on Twitter at Michael J. Elston, the traditional spelling of Michael and Elston. Also on Facebook at, you have to look him up because I don't know what the actual address
is
on Facebook.
Michael J. Elston. It's there really you go. Pretty simple.
Perfect, perfect.
But even Buzz Burbank will find it for you.
Okay, excellent. That is it for the show. Let's see here. Is there anything else I want to mention? Oh, yeah. Donna Halper tomorrow on the show. Donna Halper's back. We're going to talk about media and a lot more. Donna Helper's one of my favorites, so really looking forward to that.
She's happy right now.
Absolutely. Take care, folks. Bye-bye.
How powerful is Cox Internet? Powerful enough to let your band members in Vegas, Phoenix, and Rhode Island jam like you're all in the same garage. Get gig speeds powered by fiber from Cox. It's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, always building better. Download speeds up to 1 gigabit per second. Cox Internet is connected to the premises via coaxial connection. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply.